Peace and greetings. You're now listening to Rise of the Divine Feminine podcast with your host, Goddess Queen Jamila Asata Osset. We're in season 5. This season is all about Black women finding pieces and parts of themselves abroad. What is it like to find home outside of the land that you were born in? Welcome. Let's go.
All right. Peace and greetings, magical women. It is another episode of season 4, Rise of the Divine Feminine podcast. I am, of course, your lovely host, Goddess Queen Jamila Asata Osset. And we are still in our season of understanding how Black women are using travel as a layer for self-discovery. There's so many ways, so many tools that we can use to figure out who we are, where we're from, why we're here, what we're here to do, and what our gifts and talents are. So there's so many tools that we can use to discover ourselves. And that's ultimately what this spiritual journey is about. It's about self-discovery. It's about knowing who we are at our core. And there's so many layers of us as human beings. And today I decided to tap on the shoulder of a sister who I physically met in Mexico, who has just been on her own journey, who has been doing her own thing and really traversing through time zones and through different geographic locations. And as we all are, tapping into more of a sense of self. So I'm going to allow her to introduce herself. So, ladies.
Oh, I'm going to pour this tea real quick. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to do that. I am Obatalia Yamoshunya. I grew up in Jonesboro, Georgia, and I have been traveling on and off nomadically really since 2017. I got my passport I got it in Puerto Rico in 2017, and I've just been going ever since. And you know what came up as you were sharing that? The gloves that you get to wash dishes.
Those yellow
ones. I know that's so random. Just stay with me. Yes. So a lot of the traveling I do is being with sisters and being with family. So I'm not paying for hotel rooms and stuff like that. I can, but I'm usually invited into my people's homes. And so I keep some gloves on me so I can wash dishes, so I can cook dinner, so I can, you know, make a foot bath, because these are the ways that I care for myself. And so I just extend that love that I give to myself to others. So as you were saying, talking about the alchemy of travel, that's precisely what came into my mind, because I do believe that some of the most successful world travelers are pioneers of relationship building and sustaining.
I love that. I really love that. I love that. It doesn't feel far at all. Like, it doesn't feel like that's a off the wall thing to say. And it's a teachable moment for me too. Right now, at this very moment, I am in St. Lucia and I'm visiting a friend. And I literally just came to St. Lucia to visit her. You know, she's here, she's living by herself. She is a California native. Like, you know, this is new territory. This is not a place where she
Amira.
Yes, girl. Amira Muhammad, Chef Amira Muhammad, my sacred sister. Okay. So I'm here.
She's
right
my now. Crystal star.
Aww.
Yeah, we have complementary Mayan astrology.
Okay.
So I'm a crystal man and she's a crystal storm.
Oh, I love it.
So that's so beautiful.
Yeah, so I'm here with my sis, and it's such a relevant message for not only travel, but that element of sisterhood, you know, because a lot of us are forging this path with sisters. We're forging this path with other Black women. We're forging this path with people who we may start off as friends. You know, you may not know them that well. You may have met them online, and then they end up evolving into something else. The relationship ends up evolving through that experience. Talk to me a little bit about like just something that has happened or something that you've learned from maybe someone you've met, you know, who was a stranger or who really wasn't someone you were looking forward to developing a friendship with, and talk about how that relationship transitioned in being abroad.
Oh, wow. And you know what immediately came to mind is one of my sisters from Argentina. I was on my way to Tulum. I was traveling to the they have these little vans in Mexico called colectivos. And I went to the regular place where the colectivos normally were, and they weren't there. And something was like, you could go home. And I was like, no, I made a commitment. I'm gonna go. And so I go to the new place where the collectibles were. And there was this white van and these two with immigration. And they were asking for my passport. And I don't carry my passport on me. And they were like, demanding that I have my passport. And so I had my ID on me, and I gave them my ID, and they looked me up, my visa. I'm sitting in the van for, a couple hours, and then I'm transported to about three or four different facilities. The last facility that I get to, I realize that they are booking me like a prisoner inside of this facility. And so they take all my belongings, they package it up, they have me sign and all of that stuff. They give me some clothes, they give me this really strange toothpaste and soap and all of that, and they put me in a prison cell because essentially I'm an immigrant. So I'm in immigration prison, and I meet this girl, and I'm hysterical, I'm crying. All of the girls around me are crying. It's Cubanos, it's Argentinians. I'm the only sister in the building. They assumed I was Haitian. It was I don't know what the world got against Haitians, but they assumed that I was Haitian, and it locked me up. And so I'm sitting in here, and I share a cell with this Argentinian sister, and she's so fucking cool. And I know Espanol. I know food Espanol. I know transportation Espanol. I know light conversational Espanol. But when it comes to being in jail and trying to get yourself up out of there, I don't know that type of Espanol. And so my sister, Nina, is the one who translated things for me. She was able to communicate with the people about the food because I didn't eat meat and stuff. Like, they don't eat like breakfast, they eat like whole meals for breakfast. So she had to explain to them that I don't eat certain things. And so she was literally my translator for the whole time. People were so depressed, so we figured out how to like have games and do fun stuff and dance and run and just be more childlike because we were just trapped in there until we could get out. And so she was telling me that one lady got out because she acted a plum fool. And so I was like, okay. So the night, and okay, so this story is about to go real left. So she ends up having LSD. It's like a liquid form of LSD. We both take LSD up all night, talking, sharing, reading books, just crying, doing all of the things. And I wake up the next day and I act a whole ass. I wake up like, y'all gonna let me the fuck up out of here. And so I ended up getting out, but it wasn't, I'm sure it was the ancestors, and I'm sure it was me acting a little crazy, but it was literally because my community in Mexico got me the fuck up out. They paid to get me out. So essentially, they paid a bribe to get me out early. Legally, they can hold you for months at a time. Legally. And it happens in America all the time. ICE will collect somebody and hold them. And prison and immigration and all of that's a business. And so somebody's getting paid for those bodies being there. So I said all that to say that in that weird, topsy-turvy, emotionally crazy experience, where I had to get bribed to get out of immigration and prison, I met a beautiful sister named Nina, and she's from Argentina, and she's beautiful. And we're still cool to this day.
I love it. I love it.
3 years ago.
I love it. I love it. I am so tickled by that whole entire story, particularly because you over in the Mexican jail doing black girl stuff, trying to play games and punchinella and fly baby one, baby two, and all that stuff. Like, who does that? Who's coming in there doing that? It's just another element and layer of black girl magic. So I'm tickled by that. But also really taken aback at that particular experience. Like, that must have been really traumatizing. Don't nobody leave from America to go abroad to be traumatized, like to add on another layer of trauma that you didn't have before you left. What is the healing journey? Because I know, you know, some of the women who are, some of the sisters who's listening already live abroad. You know, they already are having their travel experience. They may be solo travelers. They may be people who are living in another country. But then there are a lot of listeners who are trying to figure this thing out, like trying to make this make sense and really trying to plan as best they can. There's so many instances of us being traumatized abroad, but there's not enough stories about the healing process that comes after that and what that looks like and what that requires. So talk a little bit about being a traumatized person in the States, then going abroad and being traumatized again somewhere else.
What I will say for the part of Mexico that we met in, that I lived in, it's the perfect place to restore. You know, it's the perfect place to process and heal and integrate and be in nature and be by water and be in the jungle and go to a medicine ceremony and go to a temazcal. And so all of these modalities and people who do, you know, sacred work were at my disposal. So, you know, I was able to, you know, get a water massage where you return to the womb and you have someone floating you and speaking affirmations into you and allowing you to rebirth yourself, because a lot of the coming out of the birth canal itself is traumatizing. So I was able to do that. There's a sister named Kim in Mexico who owns this beautiful healing studio. And so I was able to do light and crystal therapy with a vibrational bed on an amethyst mat. You know, I was able to go on cruises. My sister does the excursions. She has exclusive excursions. So she brought me on a few of the cruises. She was like, listen, just have a good time, get on the boat, lay out, it's food, it's drink. So I was able to do that. There, I can, the list is endless of the people who stepped up and shared their abundance with me so that I could just remove my, because a lot of the times your body stays arrested in the timeline of when you had the trauma. So I was able to take my body into, bring it into the present moment much more effectively because I had so many people around me. I even had a sister who does tours in Tulum. I was on my way to Tulum, so I had I would have allowed myself to be programmed to think that Tulum was a bad place because that was where I was on the way to when I was picked up. I had a sister pick my ass up. She said, we going to Tulum. Fed me, took care of me. I was able to go to this beautiful museum and, you know, do a photo shoot. All of these amazing things happened. But it was be literally because my sister's pick me up, you know, and I will say my brothers too. I'll give them their credit. Like they all were there for me. And on top of that, there's the psychosomatic, physical, spiritual aspect of that experience, but there's a very bureaucratic part of the experience, and that is equally as important in your healing process as the other stuff. The other stuff is absolutely necessary, all of that. I got on my stuff. I was like, okay, I need an estate plan. I need to make sure that I have a trust. I need to make sure that my trust owns my birth certificate. I need to make sure that I have a do not detain passport. I need to make sure that my life insurance is conveyed to my trust, a irrevocable trust, so that if any event, anything happens to me, my assets, my intellectual property, and everything that I own is not being confiscated by some creditor out there. So it made me sharp If I had a transition at that time, I didn't have life insurance. So my family would have had to do all kind of stuff and whoop de whoop and GoFundMe and blah, blah, blah to get my body back there. I was like, nah. So I went and got accidental insurance. I got an index universal life insurance policy. I got a term life insurance policy. So it made me step up in areas like as an international traveler, you have a responsibility to get that area of your life together before you bopping around out here in these streets. Because if anything happens, do you really want somebody who already got bills, who already got a job, who already have a life to now be burdened with your stuff because you wasn't prepared, but you wanted to bop around the country? Absolutely not. Get it in order. A term life insurance policy is $12 a month. If you can't afford an index universal policy, you could build up to that, you know? So I think that it's important, as just as the healing is, and just as all of the beautiful light and fluffy stuff, that we get down and dirty with these numbers and we get down and dirty with these contracts to make sure that we own our name, that we own our bodies. Because if you don't claim your estate, if you don't claim your trust, essentially you're owned by your country. There's a there was a act in 1666 that declared by the British Crown, they own you. So that's why it's important for us to get our trust. It's important for us not only to get our trust, but to fund our trust with our assets. That's why it's important for us to own precious metals. So that experience just made me 10 toes down and making sure that my intellectual property is protected, my physical body is protected. If I had a do not detain passport, they wouldn't have been able to hit me up like that. So I had to come back and reestablish a passport that had a certain type of nationality attached to it so that I wouldn't be considered citizen chattel. So there
Wow.
were so many layers that I got from healing to comprehend not only that I'm safe, I'm loved in my body, I'm secure, everything is going to be okay emotionally. But get your paperwork together so that they can't play in your face.
And that's such a crucial lesson. It's crazy how we end up learning the things that we learn and the methods that those lessons come in. I am like curious about the financial and or legal advice that you would give to someone who is like, I never thought about any of the things that you're saying. If you could give them one piece of advice financially or legally, because I know a lot of us travel, we just get the visa and travel. We apply somewhere, we get the visa, we go to Bali, there's no other kind of thought process about traveling, because we think of it like we going to Florida, like just get the paperwork that you need, get your ticket, and you go. But if there was one piece of advice that you could give financially or legally to someone based off of your actual lived experience, what would that piece of advice be? One for each, one financial, one for legal.
Okay, legal, I would definitely say comprehend, understand, and stand on trust law and comprehending equity. Because a lot of court systems are dealing in legalese and codes and statutes. But codes and statutes they don't apply to a flesh and blood living being. We're talking about corporate bodies. Corporate bodies aren't alive. And so our all capital name, last name, first name, that's a corporate body, that's not our body. So we have to legally separate and say, hey, I'm an authorized representative for the corporate body that y'all trying to do all this stuff to. So that's the legal part. Although this isn't legal advice, this is for entertainment purposes only. You can do your own research. And then the financial part, I would definitely say get, if you can afford it, get an index universal life insurance policy, because you can practice infinite banking through that practice. Attached to that policy, I would get a foreign EIN and a trust. Get your trust, and then make sure you get your foreign EIN, and then assign your life insurance policy to your trust. Make your trust the beneficiary. Don't make your no person a beneficiary. Make your trust the beneficiary. Both of those things are basically, like, as far as the financial part, it's not very expensive to do. You can erect your own trust. You don't have to go to any particular person. Anyway, once somebody sees your trust, then it's null and void. So make your own trust, get your crest, and the very first things that I would do is, protecting your legacy, protecting your body, and
Nice.
then making sure that you comprehend trust law. Like, everything is trust law. It is security and a trust account. So definitely explore trust.
Okay. All right. So name word for the day, name of the game is trust law, period. So got it. Wanted to circle back around to the community support that you received when you were locked up. Talk to me a little bit about developing relationships with other women abroad. And just know I'm asking this question as a Black woman abroad, BWA, just made that up on the spot.
I
As
like
Black women abroad
that.
who speaks a lot about the traumas that I interact with from other Black women and men abroad, who speaks a lot about people who are fleeing, their home country and what the impacts are of them fleeing and how that then translates to the way that they show up or can't show up or some of the ways that they express or don't express and just a lot of the things that they carry with them from there to wherever they're going. So how talk to me a little bit about how you have what it sounds like cut through that and developed relationships, solid relationships, or even what is the process of building community abroad? Because many of us struggle to do that in the home base.
Absolutely. Believe it or not, it's gonna sound a little counterintuitive, but I personally feel like we need a season of stoicism. We need a season of being by ourselves. If you can't be with you, boo-boo, if you can't tap into you, if you can't get your shit together and be around you for a long period of time, how you gonna invite some other people along the journey? You don't even wanna be with you. So I do think that a part of the journey requires you to just have a season with self. Get yourself in order. Like, what is it about me that I love, enjoy? What are some things that I need to mature? What are some things that I need to eliminate? What are some at start interrogating the people who do fuck with you? Why do you fuck with me? Why am I in your cipher? And really, really develop the most beautiful relationship that you can with yourself, because you are the source of everything. You're the seed. So your garden of friendship is going to be based on the seeds that you plant within yourself. So what is it about me that I need to nurture, that I need to nourish, that I need to examine, that I need to transform, that I need to see, that I need to do in order to make sure that I'm in the most healthy relationship with myself? And then from that place, we can add all of the other parts and pieces. And then I do feel like sisterhood is going to ultimately be one of the most triggering experiences, one of the most, activating experiences, one of the most transformative experiences. It just is, and so be open to difficult conversations. I think that that has been the most transformative part of my sisterhood journey, because one thing about me is I make myself at home. In everybody's house. If I'm in your house, I'm gonna make myself at home. I'm gonna clean, I'm gonna cook. I gotta make sure, can I be butt booty naked or do I need to have a robe on? So, that is intrusive in people's house. You're like, what is going on? So I had to learn boundaries. I had to learn all of these things, and I had to be willing to be course corrected. I needed to be willing to have somebody be like, girl, we can't do this, and be able to see that. So being able to have those difficult conversations, and also being able to be sentimental and express how you feel. Like, so many people don't express how they feel to the people that they love the most. And the people that they love the most just never know how good it could feel, how restorative and nourishing it could be to have someone tell you why you matter to them. So I believe that the bedrock of healthy relationships, whether it's sisters or family or a lover, is vulnerability and transparency and the ability to really truly allow yourself to have difficult conversations. Because in those difficult conversations, you get to peel back that onion. And all this hardened, all this other stuff that we have going on, you're like, oh, I comprehend. I understand. Thank you for sharing that with me. I would have never known. You know? So I feel like that is truly the bare of all of it.
I want to ask, what if you fundamentally disagreed with what was being articulated? We have sisters from all over the place who have had situations that don't have anything to do with us personally. They're coming to you with a situation, but that situation really isn't yours. It could be a projection. It could be them being triggered by something that happened in the past that again has nothing to do with you. So there's many, 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 many instances where we experience those type of conversations, but there's a level of honesty or self-awareness that isn't even present enough to where it's challenging to receive anything, 'cause sis, you're not well. You're not well. I'm looking and I'm seeing, it's not 100%. So how have you been in that type of situation, first of all? Can you relate to that? And if so, how did you handle it?
It depends on because I have this practice that I call, examining my sphere of influence. So if that relationship is very close to me, however it's harmful to me, then I'll just move them to an outer ring of influence. They might not be as close to me. Because at the end of the day, if you are not ready to relate in a way that is innovative, in a way that's self-accountable, in a way that we can move through difficult moments, that means that your level of maturity isn't where it needs to be to relate to me intimately. It doesn't mean I love you, don't mean I don't fuck with you. It's just that to the degree with which I would have fucked with you, I got to dial it back a little bit because you ain't ready. Because and I do that with everybody, men, women, child, whoever, who everybody can get it. Like if you have to be just like when you at the theme park. And they like, you got to be this tall to ride this ride. It's the same way with me, boo-boo. You ain't gonna be able to ride this ride with me if you don't have the spiritual maturity to relate in such a way that requires us to be responsible for our actions, for our impact, for what we say. Because I will take accountability. If I fucked up, I'll be like, listen, I fucked up. And you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna change my behavior so I don't harm you in the future. And if I don't change my behavior, you have all the permission to remove me from your life if I'm harmful to you. Period. So if people are not ready to relate in that way, it's nothing wrong with that. You're still on your journey. You a flower. It takes flowers time to grow and break through the soil and bloom. I'll give you your space to grow, but you can't be up and around here and super close while doing it. You can be harmful to yourself and to me. So that's how I really approach that. You know, it's not about pushing people away or or judging anyone because I'm literally in no space to judge. I've been on this planet for a long time doing dumb shit. For me,
Start back. Start back. Blue check mark, okay? Shoot.
like, listen, do what you got to do. You just can't be so close. And I mean, I've been in relationships where people put me in an outer sphere of influence. They sat me down and was like, "Hey, can't fuck with you like that. Don't hate you. Can't fuck with you like that." And I had to receive that. And now I don't feel so bad having to do that with others. You know, because it's been done with me. I think that this is what people who love themselves do. If you love yourself, you're not going to put you need to be communication wise. I'm going to limit my communication with you until you get there. And I believe that you'll get there. I believe in you. So I think that relating.
I was gonna just
I'm
say,
listening.
I want to subgroup on the main point. What I'm hearing you say is that you're not cutting people off, Western style. You're not on that. It ain't none to cut that off. Not that, but putting space between you and that person so that they can continue to reach the height requirement, reach the maturity requirement in order to meet that qualification to be a true friend. Am I picking up what you put down or?
When I created space between me and someone else, it wasn't necessarily about them maturing. It was about me maturing because I think that sometimes we relate from our most wounded spaces and we don't recognize that because that's how we've been relating our whole lives. So when you take the time to have space, it stops being about the other person because a lot of the times what I really want us to get into the practice of comprehending is that one, everybody is the Most High in human form and flesh, and the Most High comes in all shapes, colors, sizes, and characters. Two, you're always dealing with you, and you. You know, everything that you're attracted to, you're giving off a beacon and a frequency in some way, shape, or form. You're aligned with that energy. So I think when it comes to relationships for me, whether it's male, female, platonic, or some type of intimate lover, if it's business or any of that, again, you are the seed. It always comes back to you at the end of the day. So when I took space from a particular being, I was able to see how I was relating from my neglected little girl who just wanted her daddy, you know, who wanted to be seen, heard, thought about, cared for, considered. And so, you know, when it came to me feeling like I wasn't being considered, I needed to figure out how often I had been abandoning, rejecting myself, and not considering myself in circumstances. Because a lot of the times we want to give our internal issues a face. And so I stopped putting somebody else's face on problems that were coming up because they needed to come up for me. Sometimes people come to trigger you, to bring things up so you can examine it. You know, everybody, if you really give yourself opportunity, everybody is an opportunity for you to really see yourself. And you say, oh, okay, that's there. And you can determine if you want to judge it or if you want to love it, if you want to resolve it, and you want to reconcile it. So when I took that space from certain people, it gave me an opportunity to really see like where that is in me. And even if I can't immediately see it in myself, be now I'm aware. Now it's brought to my attention so that I don't embody that energy. If I don't like it coming my way, I'm not gonna give it out. So I think that with that space, I really was able to see myself, and that's how I relate, period. Now, like, it's all me. What do I want to engage with? Do I want to engage with the best, most evolved aspects of me, or do I want to do Days of Our Lives and, you know, Love and Hip Hop? You know, do I want all of that, or do I want to really have deeply meaningful, satisfying, fulfilling exchanges with everybody in my cipher? And it's all contingent on how much I'm willing to love myself, how much I'm willing to see myself, which is a type of love.
I love it. And such profound words and wisdom about like just self-reflection. That's really what self-discovery is about, continuously observing yourself in these situations with these people. And that's why the, when you brought up taking time to yourself at the beginning of your traveling journey, I so agree, and yet I so disagree. Because what I find is that people don't know when to stop. People don't know when to come out of isolation. It becomes a whole thing. I have met women who have moved. You don't already moved 100,000 miles away from where you grew up and where you live. Now you're moving on the outskirts of the mountains of the civilization that you now in. Like you're not really giving yourself a chance, really. Like you live you now you're living in a hut with the Maasai people. They don't speak no English. Like, what are you doing? Like, sis, you what is the psychosis that explains the decision-making factors for this? It is challenging to, to advise. Like, I know the benefits of being by myself. I was by myself when I left. Like, I left in 2020. I went to Egypt. I was by myself. I left and I went to Ghana. I was by myself. I left. I went to Kenya by myself. Like, I was in all these countries by myself, not knowing anyone. But one of the things that I will say I always did was I always tapped into the community, like almost like a check-in, like checking in for my flight, like, okay, so y'all know I'm coming. I'm here, you know, I'm coming. But I didn't necessarily always throw myself in until I was kind of ready to go out and socialize. So I will say that there is something to learn about the Ma'at way of interacting. Even while you are doing the self work, you still have to come outside, you know. And eventually, when you do come outside, whatever you see being reflected to you, it tells you how much work you've done on the inside. It tells you, oh, okay, I did some good stuff because these people don't get on my nerves like they used to. Like, you know, these people, I don't get triggered like I used to when I'm around these folks because now I'm good, like I'm stabilized. But I do agree, you do need that time for self. When you are on this journey, the question that I have that I don't think you answer is, how do you build community abroad? Like, how? Like, what's the what is the what is your process? What have you done to build real relationships? Not, I'm not talking about the touch and go. I'm not talking about the people who you know, they're there for a season or a reason. No, I'm talking about lifetimers who you met while you were wherever you were. Tell me about some of the things you've learned about building real relationships abroad.
That's a beautiful question. For me, it was a lot of the time I look for the, like, if community is one big aura, I have a gift, skill, and ability to kind of see, like, where the aura may be a little impacted, where there might be some gray areas, where there might be some holes. And I just go in into those spaces and I become glue or resolve or water and add to repairing the whole aura itself. So for me, when I got to Mexico, I saw that in that community aura, there needed to be spaces of deep, abiding feminine spaces where you could come in and shed your clothes if you wanted to. We would have tea parties. We had naked tea parties. And so we would come together and have naked tea parties. I would do, it's called sister teas. So, you know, you would bring whatever you had an abundance of. So if you had abundance of incense, if you had abundance of rice, if you had an abundance of lentils, if you had an abundance of whatever, you just brought from your abundance. And we would all share and swap. We would have certain themes. We would have make and takes. We would, I would make a big batch of tea for us to all just partake and share and just have a good time without it being an objective, without it being a price tag attached to it. Because I also think that there are spaces where you're going to have some type of financial exchange. And it also needs to be spaces where it's just fellowship and love. You just bring yourself. And so I think in doing that, it had people to immediately shed whatever type of armor they would have walked in with had they had to have some kind of cover, or if it was like some super structure to it and we have an objective and da 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 da. It wasn't about that kind of exchange. It was about us saying, hey, we just want to get together. If you want to come and fellowship, come fellowship. And then, you know, I would send out like what to bring, what's recommended to wear. I would say, you know, bring a little robe if you want to just wear a robe, you know. So it was a really, I would cultivate brave and safe spaces for women to come and just be. So I think that one of the ingredients that I would definitely recommend is to, if you don't see the spaces that you will find yourself into, it could possibly be an invitation to create it. Doesn't mean you have to, but if it's something that you, if you've been going to stuff and you're like, this kind of whack, I mean, I get it. You know, if you're feeling like everything you're going to is whack, maybe it's your opportunity to create a space that you know is needed. So like I said, that's what I mean by, you know, going and looking at the aura and saying, you know, this is a big, beautiful golden aura, but I see something right there. I could go over there and do that for sure. And so, you know, that's what I did. And it feels really good because it's still alive today.
So how does that translate to actual relationships, like actual, you know, heart to heart, one to one long-lasting relationships? And I asked this question to someone who, I don't know, for some reason I was just thinking about working when I was younger. Like when I would have these jobs, working at Old Navy, working at Kroger, like just working little jobs as a teenager. And I always felt like there was some back end event happening that I wasn't invited to, because I would get hired with these people. They do like these hiring things and people come in and it's like five of y'all or 10 of y'all get hired. And eventually some people fall off. But the people who I always would stay on with, I found that they had a different sort of relationship with management. Like they would have a closer relationship with management. And I'm like, did you work a shift that I didn't work? Like we work the same shifts, like we be here the same time. So how is it that y'all are joking and laughing and playing together, and I am still where we were when we first got hired? Like what am I missing? What is the what are the other steps that I'm missing in between where you are and where I currently am? And so I'm wondering, when it comes to these overseas relationships, how are you developing solid friendships? Like this is this, you're not there for 15 years. You're not there for, it's not your childhood home. They don't know your mom and them. They don't, y'all don't go to the same church. Like what is this that I am, what are these back end meetings y'all having to make these friendships that I don't know nothing about? Back end
I,
meeting.
what isn't it? Let me see. I gotta look this up real quick because
Okay.
a whole song lyric. I think in song lyrics. Let me see. I peek. 1 second, because I got the. Okay, here we go. I pulled it up. Let me get the lyrics.
Okay.
See, I pick my friends like I pick my fruit. My granny told me that when I was only a youth, I don't walk around trying to be what I'm not. I don't waste my time trying to get what you got. I work at pleasing me because I can't please you. And that's why I do what I do. My soul flies free like a willow tree. Do we? And if you don't want to be down with me, you don't want to pick from my apple tree.
Classic.
Exactly
Classic.
what came to
Not you bringing the philosopher, the scholar, the sacred woman, the priestess, the witch, the wise woman, the E to the Badu. Not you bringing her into the Rise of the Divine podcast. Yes. Welcome. I love it.
quality relating has to do with our intuitive ability to feel in our body whether or not an exchange is healthy for us. Because believe it or not, immediately we know. And I think that that is the thing. Like sometimes people feel like they have to have multiple exposures to someone to kind of pique their energy. But people in their words will tell you exactly who they are. And then, even if they're trying to put out the perfect veneer and the perfect mask and be a certain type of way, it's always something that you're like, I need to monitor that. And so if I feel like I got to monitor you because I can't really, comprehend what type of exchange we having, that's already a no for me. Like, I like relationships that feel like breathing. Like, we could sit and not talk at all. We could just be in the same room reading, or we could cook together. We could shoot the shit and laugh and kick it, or we can build a business together. And it's not no weird shit. I feel like as soon as I feel some weird shit, or if I feel like I'm auditioning or performing and all of that, I'm too grown for that. I'm gonna be 40 in a couple years. I don't have, like, maybe when I was in my younger pleasing days and all of that, I could do all of that, but I just don't even got the energy to put that type of labor out into the universe anymore. And I think that it come right relationships really come with knowing who you are and what you want, and being able to effectively gauge whether or not you want certain energies around you. So it takes a, I feel like true relationships, meaningful, lasting relationships are only, again, your seeds. They are only as beautiful as your relationship that you have with yourself and your own inner core truth. Because I can tell you right now, people who I can't say I fuck with, I picked up on not fucking with them from the beginning. Now, I might have tried to convince myself of some things. I might try to put some glitter and butterflies around the situation because I always love to see the best in people. And at the same time, they already told me. They already showed it. It was already put out there. And I have to have spiritual discipline enough to trust my intuition and be like, you know what? My intuition is saying, nah. So I'm gonna run an outer sphere of influence. Don't mean I don't fuck with you. Don't mean I don't love you. I want you to do well and be great in life. But you can't be all up in this. You know, so I still think the bedrock of those successful, sustainable relationships are only as good as the relationship you have with yourself. And then being able to interrogate people as to how would you like to relate with me? What feels like a good exchange? What feels like home for you? And then we could cultivate that together because you could have an idea in your head about how you like to relate, but they might like other stuff. You know, and I think that sometimes we relegate like love languages to just people we're intimately connected with in a relationship sense. But I need to know my mom's love language is shopping. My mama like to shop, you know? And so I might not buy anything, but if it brings her joy to just be out looking through stuff, I'll just go with her. So I think it's important to know what everybody in your life's love language is and be able to speak it, even if it's not your first tongue, even if it's a foreign tongue to you. If they enjoy it and it's not harmful to you or them, indulge. So I think sometimes a relationship requires you to know yourself, but also get out of your own way so that you can see what other people care for as well.
So I want to shift back to the beginning of the conversation when we're talking about your time in Mexico. The first question I have is, have you lived anywhere else, or I guess tell us about your move, like where you moved from, where you moved to. We just kind of jumped straight through that. So tell us about where you was, how long you were there, maybe parts that you lived in. Let's start from that and kind of going back to the foundation.
Okay, so my roots, I was actually born in Baltimore, Maryland, but I grew up in Georgia. So my roots are in Georgia. I went to Clark Atlanta University. You know, I did the whole HBCU life thing. You know, I did the whole yearbook thing and the Women's Leadership Council and all of the Black life. School life stuff. I did all of that. Like I said, I think it back in 2017 is when I made the move to Puerto Rico, and I stayed in Aguadilla and El Junque, their mountains, and I stayed in El Junque Mountain for a while, and that was beautiful. I mean, you
How
could
long is a
walk.
mile?
That was back in 2017.
How long were you
We
just
breaking up.
mountainside?
I was only in the mountainsides a couple months. It wasn't long.
That's fine. I was asking that because
But it was.
I wanted to go back to that question so we can talk about rural life versus metropolitan life. Because when I met you, we were in the metropolitan area. So just going putting a pin in it.
But you know what? What was beautiful about that part of Puerto Rico is that it was a fusion of both. Like the mountains were only 15 to 20 minutes away from the seashore.
Oh,
So you
lovely.
got the best of both worlds. So you
Lovely.
got the top of the mountain and then you got the little city down by the waters. It was just amazing. So
Lovely.
that was my first taste of travel was going to Puerto Rico because you didn't have to have a passport. So I went there and I kicked it there for a while. And then in 2018 was my first exposure to Mexico when I went to Playa del Carmen. And so, and then I went to Jamaica. And Jamaica was sexy. They drive crazy, but it was sexy. And then I went to the Bahamas. So I've done a lot of Caribbean hopping. I haven't done a lot of the continent or Europe, but I've been in a lot of Central America and a lot of Caribbean. But that's because I love the weather. Like I'm definitely a tropical bird. I don't necessarily have a desire to just be cold by choice. Like
For
if I have a choice, I have to be cold.
that part. Say if you see the positive people in the
it.
back. So where did you spend the most amount of time? Like where did you have an address? You know, you could pick up mail, like, you know, people can come and visit you. Where, tell me about those places. Was it Playa only? Was it in
So
Cancun?
that was definitely, it was a definitely play. The Yucatan for me in general, like I treat cities like lovers. Like I'm polyamorous, but with cities. And so Playa for me feels like I can come and go as I please, and Playa will always be there to love me, to take care of me, to make sure I eat, to make sure I'm well fed. Well, so I was saying that Playa to me is I treat cities like I guess I'm polyamorous, but for cities.
Yes.
And so Playa to me is kind of like a lover that is very secure in themselves, and they're like, go and be, go do all of the things, go to New Orleans, go to Chicago, go to Atlanta, go to LA, do what you gotta do, and when you're ready, come home, you know. But I'm gonna always be here for you. And I love that about Playa is that it's one of those places that is constantly changing. However, there is a rhythm or like a heartbeat that is ever present there. And it is like people say to this day, like Playa will spit you out. And I'm so grateful that every time I go, I'm not spit out. Like I always have somewhere to go. I always have somewhere to be. Like if I don't have a home of my own, I'm invited into a home. You know, if I have a need, it's met. So in Playa del Carmen, I was the When I left to come after the whole immigration thing, right before I left, I was like, I should have been able to give a lot of the stuff I had away because I had an apartment. It was filled with things. And so before I left, I started this community called Buy Nothing. So Buy Nothing is very popular in the States. It's pretty much practically global, but I didn't affiliate it with actual brand Buy Nothing. I just created a Buy Nothing community in Playa. And now it's over 700 members. And essentially, you can drop into the space and ask for what you need and see if anybody has it, or you can give something away. And so, in the energy of that, people have started giving away classes, courses, products, in-person experiences, in addition to, of course, like I have extra spoons. Anybody need spoons? I have transplants. Anybody need some pythos? You know, I have extra soil if anybody needs soil to plant their garden. So exchange is based on commerce, and we've been able to grow this beautiful community where money is not a barrier to get what you need. And so I think that, again, just being able to go into a community, see where the holes are and fill them. That I feel like that's the quickest. If you want to create community, that is the quickest way to create it,
That's
is
it.
to see where the holes are and fill that hole.
Especially if it's in your
But
wheelhouse.
yeah, client is my address.
Especially if that hole is in your wheelhouse. It sounds like you come in and you are the filler for what is in your lane, you know, and repeatedly you've talked about giving and being a giver in that way. And I love that. It's beautiful. How long were you in Playa? And can you give me a moment? 'Cause girl, I have to pee again.
Yeah, all my travels involve staying with other people.
I mean, it's a what it really is to me, what it says that you go and stay at people's house like that, what that says is that you've established a solid understanding of being a house guest and being a sister. That's what it says to me. Because I have had the friend who come and stay at my house. Like I just, you know, I've been the, yeah, you can come and stay at my house. And that guest who is always welcome. I always welcome them because there's a certain vibration that they come with. There's a certain understanding. They don't impose on me. It's not an inconvenience to host them. Like I like enjoying time with them. You know, they and they're not expecting me to be there all the time to entertain them. Like there's a certain like a sweet melody, like a sweet thread of an ideal visitor. And I think the only time, well, the time that I've had the most when it comes to hosting was on couch surfing. So I don't know what possessed me to join couch surfing, but I was like, oh, I'm gonna go on to couch surfing. And like when people travel, I'm gonna, you know, let them come stay with me. So I was cool with that. I've always been cool with being the platform, with being the foundation, with being the receiver of the guest and to do the hosting. I've just never been hosted. So it's different, you know. Even now, like this is my very good friend. Like this is not even my friend. This is my sister at this point. And I knew it was my sister because, like you, when I came to her house yesterday, I just arrived yesterday. Baby, first thing I did was take off my pants. I sat down at the kitchen table, took off my pants, and jumped on a video call. So I'm like, oh, I'm at home. I'm at my sister's house. Like it's in my head. So that was I'm at home. I just came from the airport. I was traveling all day for like 12 hours. But first thing I'm gonna do, take off these shoes, take off these socks, and I took off my pants. So I'm walking around with my butt cheeks hanging out, you know what I mean, in my underwear and my top. And I didn't even realize, oh wait, she has a house guest. So now I'm scrambling like, damn, where I put my pants? I got this clothes on. I couldn't even find the pants by the time the guest came out. I just had to throw a blanket around me. Hi, how are you doing? Yes, nice to meet you. I'm got like so all of these things are new to me. It feels like I kind of know what to do, but at the same time, I guess my big thing is how can I do this better? How can I show up more efficiently, or you know, just be what it is that I've had? Because I've had really, really great house guests who know how to pace it. They're just not in my face like a little Chihuahua puppy, but they're also not outside like a bar dog. You know, it's a good balance. So yeah, I can really, really appreciate this conversation even more. So what I want to do is I want to go back to self. You've talked a lot about things outside of self, you know, experiences, people, community, giving, et cetera. Talk to me about the ways you've observed yourself changing as a result of your time abroad. Like, let's say you had stayed, were you living in Jonesboro before you left?
Before I left Atlanta, I was in Decatur,
Okay,
West
so let's
Virginia.
say you had stayed in Decatur, right? That would be the Decatur of Italia. But because you moved to Mexico, then you emerged into a different version. Talk to me a little bit about, or a lot about, the version that you see yourself being or having become as a result of your time abroad.
Okay, thank you for that question. Because before I left Atlanta, I actually was called Ashanti, not Obatalia. I actually gave myself the name Obatalia in Mexico. It was in 2020. It was the same year that my mom had transitioned. I had gone through a major breakup with someone who I love dearly. And so that name change was an opportunity for me to even step into a new vibration. And I personally feel like one of the most impactful gifts that I have been given from traveling internationally is a layer and level of sensitivity for other people's cultures, the way that they do things, the way that they relate with each other, and being able to expand my language palette to be able, because one of the things about Playa that makes it so unique is that you could find yourself speaking French. You could find yourself speaking Espanol. You know, I have some Brazilian friends, and then there's different types of Espanol because there are some certain people that speak more of a Spaniard Espanol. There are certain people that speak more of Mexicano Espanol, and then there are people in between who speak Mayan. You know, you have Huichol people, so you have to know who you're talking to. And you know, so I'm not just learning Espanol, I'm learning Mayan, I'm learning French. Like, I have a little translator app on my phone where you can translate multiple different languages. So, you know, it's really created this very rich and robust way of me relating with my reality. So much so to the point where, you know, if I'm trying to tell somebody to go straight, I'm like, trecho. And it's like, what that mean? You know, so I have to like check myself on who I'm talking to and what kind of language I'm using when I'm talking to them, because now it's becoming a part of my fiber. And so I really think that with travel, it has given me such a nuance. It's kind of like if you're listening to a song, right? And then somebody adds in like a violin sound, and you're like, oh shit, you know, the song was good before, but when the violin came in, you know, and then the beat dropped, so it's like I'm getting a full sound. You know, it would have just been good with a couple chords of a guitar, but you have all of these instruments coming in and creating this whole production. So for me, I've been able to really.
Are you enjoying this episode? If so, head over to freethefeminine.com to take the spiritual evolution quiz. Find out which level of evolution in your spiritual journey you're on right now. See you over at freethefeminine.com.
Grow as a musician because I'm an artist at my heart. I've been able to grow as an illustrator because I do animated artwork. I've been able to grow as a businesswoman. A lot of people need a lot of correction around their mission, their vision, their values, how they want to project their business essence out into the universe. So I've been able to help people to fine-tune that, so much so that I do weekend retreats. And I really help people to, ground what it is that they're trying to do in their business, which is directly connected to their spiritual growth and expansion and confidence. We do photo shoots. I've been doing these beautiful photo shoots with entrepreneurs, women entrepreneurs, helping to them to find their light, helping them to see themselves as just not somebody in the background, but see themselves as the main character. So it's really, I feel like travel really helps you to step into your main character energy. You know, I was really cool with just playing in the background, being an assistant. I was an executive assistant. That was my one and only job I ever had. But yeah, I was an executive assistant and I was cool with just being in support. And what I've learned is, I have a mission, I have a voice, and I have a message that needs to be received. And so I think that what international travel, especially as a Black woman, has done has made me stop equating my success to my productivity levels. I've rested more than I've ever rested before while traveling. I mean, dedicated whole days to sleep, dedicated whole days to the beach, dedicated whole days to just walking through the jungle, So, it's just really given me, I stopped defining myself by systems and structures that were developed to benefit colonizers and not to the indigenous people that were being colonized. So I've shed so much of the dogmas and the forced things that I needed to think about myself in order to make somebody else's machine work. And I've been able to define myself for myself. I feel more confident than I've ever felt in my life. I feel more aligned than I've ever felt in my life. And I feel like I'm actually called to go to more places and spaces that are cold, possibly, or are not so tropical. Because everybody need to get it, And there are sisters out there who need to be loved on in a healthy way, in a way that's not, parasitic to their growth, So
Love
I'm
it.
excited to see what.
Love it. I'm curious also about I'm gonna get my notebook and write this down because I want to make sure I follow up. I'm curious also about like you were saying something about discovering a layer of yourself. Was it that? Yeah, you were saying something about discovering layers of yourself. Oh man, now I gotta go back and listen to the whole recording and I'm gonna be like, that's what I was gonna ask her. We can move forward. We can move forward. I'm always really, really interested in the way that people see their. That's what it was. Okay. So you have lived in Playa and then now you're living where?
Still in Playa, but I'm currently in the United States.
Okay. How long have you been in the US now?
About 2 or 3 weeks now. I went to Tulum and came back, so I've been here about 2 weeks.
Okay. So, and I asked that because you were talking about your office there in the US, right? Okay. So I asked that because I know that there have been like transitions, for all of us. Like for me, the place that I started off at is not the place I'm at right now. Where I ended up in the middle of that journey was different. But there are those of us who can spend a significant amount of time in the US more than others. I can't be in the US for real at all. Like I just can't. There's no place that feels like home to me at this point. If it feels like a shoe that I used to wear when I was little with the buckle on it, it's a white shoe I used to wear that at church. And then like I can't wear that no more. Like I can't. It's too small. The shoe's too small. And so there are those of us who feel like I feel who are like, nah, girl, I can't be there no more. But then there are others who still have home in the US, or even more still, others who have to return to the US, for a variety of different reasons. I'm wondering what you would say to those who have to return and feel like they're failing, who feel like I didn't do what I set out to do. I didn't become who I wanted to become. I didn't like nothing. Like nothing that happened on this journey was what I wanted to happen. Like I'm still processing it, but yeah, I need to be back. And there's mixed feelings around that. What would you say to the sister who feels like that?
Well, first I would just hug her energetically and pause, because some things don't need to be said, they just need to be felt. And then what I would say is, if you are here, let me put my baby when this business hat come on, but if you are here, you need to be setting up your family office. You need to be reading, hold on, let me find it.
And not the business hat coming on. Not her going from, girl, let me give you a hug, to girl, let's get to work, okay? Let's make this
Because
change.
listen, because here's the thing, I say this with so much love. A lot of the times we are looking for what is already our birthright here. We think a lot of Indigenous people, melanated people, Black women, whatever you want to call yourself, more ish, there's so many names. A lot of folks think that we were only brought to Turtle Island by virtue of the enslavement of a people. Many of our ancestors were here before all of that. And we have been brainwashed into believing that a certain type of phenotype or a certain genetic indicators are the representation of Indigenous people to this land, when the Indigenous land looked like me and you. So claim your birthrights. So this book is called What Would the Rockefellers Do? And what the Rockefellers have done is set up a waterfall trust system. They utilize infinite banking. They utilize being able to properly educate their family on how to interact with wealth so that it's not blown away in one generation. And so I'm like, if you here, make the most of it. Mature your trust. Get all of your assets inside of your trust. Claim all of your birthrights. Get your ministry set up so you're not paying no taxes. Learn how bills work and banking and securities work so that you are not taking a dividend payment to you every month and paying them extra money on top of what they already been paid. There is no debt. Taxes are voluntary. And go research what it means when I say those things so that you're not feeling like you under the thumb of a system that was built actually to benefit you. Learn with the act that I talked about in 1666, and all of these things that are happening right up underneath our noses, but we be distracted with politics and all of these people who don't got nothing to do with our everyday thing. Every day, a little bit more people giving away their rights left and right. When I go through customs, they be taking people pictures and doing all this other extra shit. I say, hey, I don't want no picture,
I don't want that.
I don't want no pictures. or you going through TSA and they're taking pictures of you. Like, so people are just giving away their rights because they don't know them. So you in a country that you hate, but you don't even understand that this country was developed to benefit you. And you don't want to do the reading to understand why I say that. So you can feel like a failure if you want to, or you can get down to business and collect your inheritance. And exactly how I would give to somebody. Dry your tears, get the snot up out your nose, and then get your shit because it's here. And then you could take all of the money that you recoup from all of the bills that you done pay, all of the student loans you done pay, open up your TDA account and let them deposit your securities so that you could go move wherever you want, whenever you want to, and make sure that your passport is set up in such a way that you're not considered a citizen chattel. So I just don't, I appeal to everybody's feelings around feeling like a failure and da 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 and blah 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 blah. But a lot of people are structuring what they consider to be success based on an antiquated system that was developed to benefit people who subjected another people to do their work and their labor for them. So you want to determine what your success is and who you are and all of the things that you accomplish based on some antiquated stuff that benefits old white people? A whole dying, failing generation that's going down slowly? You want to put your whole everything on that crux? I'm not gonna do that. Our ancestors have definitely sacrificed enough blood on this land to claim our inheritance, get all of our land, get our mineral rights, get our allodial titles and our land patents, because that's how they taken our land to this day, is because we don't know how contracts are working. We not read contracts. Contracts are written in banking language, so you have to learn banking language. So that's what I would tell her who feeling away. Feel your feelings, cry, and then get up. What the girl, it's a girl online. She said, stand up. Stand up.
She said, "Get up, girl. Use this cash and wipe your tears, okay? Don't let the other standards and the other things that you've been told, the other stories that don't belong to you, get in the way of you seeing reality." I get it. I get
And
it.
learn and learn. And I'm telling you, the language is how they're getting us. Because, for example, if you look at a law, there's a law dictionary called Black's Law. If you look up what black means in the law dictionary, it means pale. And white in the law dictionary has to do with more of your status on a specific type of record. So a lot of people are operating under a language that considers them legally dead. So if you consider yourself to be Hispanic or you consider yourself to be black in legalese, that means you're dead. So you have to know what language to speak and when so that you don't end up putting yourself in somebody's jurisdiction that you don't want to be in. This is why most of our brothers are locked up to this day, is because they don't understand the language that they're agreeing to operate under. And then when you decide that you want to be appointed a court appointed representation, that when you choose a lawyer, that means that you are incompetent and you can't represent yourself. So a great majority of the stress in not just melanated people's lives, but in most people's lives who live in the United States comes from them not comprehending their birthrights. And then I've been on this soapbox for a minute, yelling this one to the rooftop. You can enforce that. And that changes the game. It just does. So if you find yourself back here, learn the rules of this game and get yourself set up straight so that when you go out here and you are in somebody else's nation, you are in your right status. So if anything go down because you are in your right status, you could do what you need to do, and you ain't in nobody's jail cell being told what to do, when to get up and when to eat and when to go to
That
sleep.
part, that part, that part. Yeah, I resonate a lot with the lessons that we have to learn the hard way, and the lessons that we find out through our own trial and error is always so much. Tell me about some land lessons. You talking about living in Playa and having a relationship with Playa. Tell me about some lessons that you've received being on that land. I know that our ancestors speak to us everywhere, But what kind of relationships did you develop with the land, with that actual Yucatan Peninsula that you mentioned earlier, that still resonate for you right now? Like you still carry those lessons?
The Yucatan to me, this is gonna sound super graphic, but to me, it's like, you ever seen Moana?
Yes.
Have you seen the movie Moana?
Of course.
Okay, so remember when she restored the heart of Te Fiti and she turned into this big earth goddess?
Yes.
That is what the Yucatan gives me that vibes, but a lactating goddess. So I feel like a lot of people are in the Yucatan to like be nourished and be fed at the earth's bosom, you know? And I think the energy that you bring is what will be amplified in your aura. So if you come in raggedy, your raggediness is just gonna get amplified. And if you're coming to restore, being restored is gonna be amplified. And if you come in to do business and you're really good at what you do, that's gonna be amplified. People gonna start aligning with you. You could say on Tuesday, you know what? I want to build a boat. It'll be all kind of people you meet. You'll go to the grocery store and bump into somebody, and both of y'all grab a mango at the same time. And be like, who are you? You know what? I build boats. You build boats? I'm trying to build a boat. You know, it happens like that in Mexico, in that part of Mexico specifically.
So tickled with you talking about it like that, because you are not wrong. Like I did not spend no time on the other side of the Yucatan, on that mainland or whatever that is, the Mexico City side of it. I spent zero time over there, baby. I was all up in Oaxaca, all up in Cancun, all up in Playa, all up in Tulum. Like I spent zero time on the, I don't even know what the other side is like. I don't know about that side. Because Yucatan is my indigenous land. This is where I'm from. This is where my heart is. This is where my ancestors pulled me back to. This is it for me, baby. Can't nobody tell me nothing. And it's literally like that. Like
And
it's.
have you seen They Came Before Columbus?
Have I seen what?
I'm about to send you a link to a book. It's called They Came Before Columbus.
Oh, yes. I know that.
And on the
I know that book.
and you see that big old Olmec head that's on the front of the
I
cover.
know that book. I actually. Like my ex introduced me to that book, and I think about 2013. Like I've been on it. And I think
We've been there.
been. So one of the things that I think is beautiful is recognizing those synchronicities and being able to accept it for what it is and being able to name it. You know, that's such a beautiful example with Moana. For those of you who are listening who have not seen it. You need to write it down and go and watch it, Moana 1 and Moana 2, because Moana 2 is banging, first of all. Who decided that? It's
It
banging. Like, that's not, we're not going to play around with this. But since I'm not going to hold you, I wanted to ask you a closing question. I had wrote down three really solid closing questions, but I feel like the one that resonates. If you could gift, okay, let me do this. What part of your story still feels unfinished? What part still feels unfinished? And how are you in a place where you can accept that?
A place in my story. Let me make sure I'm receiving the question correctly. So when you say a place in my story, is it relating to because the theme of everything that we talked about is under the umbrella of international travel. So is it a place in my story that feels
Just any place in your story that still feels unfinished. You know, for me in my story, parenthood still feels unfinished. I'm like, I still haven't finished this journey with parenting and, getting ready to renew my library card so I can have another baby or another, some more babies. Like, it's still unfinished. So, there's still I got pages with no story yet for that part. So what part of your story has the
gotcha.
yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I would immediately say the part of my story that definitely feels unfinished is just being a professional musician. I think that I've had every career that you could think of. I did nails, I did toes, I did hair. I worked at the flea market. I used to sell fake Jordans and fake polos. You
Okay.
know, I was a stripper for a very short amount of time. You know,
Okay.
I was the worst stripper on the planet. I definitely got fired, but I did it. You know, I was a waitress. Like, I've done all of it. I got fired from that job too. I was a go-go dancer. So
Oh
I've done all of the things, and at the heart of everything that I've ever done, everything that I wanted to do since I was a little girl was music. And so I really want to just allow my commitment to my artistry and my craft to open doors for me and to bet on myself. I took an unorthodox path because I wanted to protect my assets first. I wanted copyrights, I wanted trademarks, I wanted patents. I wanted to make sure that all my lyrics were secured so that couldn't nobody fuck with my intellectual property. You know, I wanted to make sure that I had passive income established, so all of my life and hopes and all of that ain't, you know, bet on how much money I can make from this gig or that gig. So I went about it. I went and got my business degree from Clark Atlanta University and established businesses for myself, established assets for myself. And so now that that's done, I want to, you know, go busking, you know, go travel places and just go sing outside with an amplifier and my guitar. You know, I want to go perform at festivals. I want to be able to do my music therapy and really help people to tap into their voice, especially I'm a survivor of sexual trauma. So helping women to connect their womb space with, you know, connect their lips with their other lips, you know. And just make sure that we don't allow ourselves to be silenced because of the experiences that we've had. Because a lot of the times, those are the people that these particular what's the word that I'm predators. Predators are not targeting people who don't got bright lights, and who don't believe in themselves, and who aren't all they targeting people who shine. They're targeting people who you just can't put. You don't understand why they're giving off this aura, but I want some, you know. And so being able to assist people with finding their voice again, which is the work that I do at retreats and things of that nature, finding your voice, finding your sense of sensitivity, finding your sensuality, being able to reconnect with your womb. I'll say this last thing and then I'll be done. When I started my practice with Vipassana meditation requires you to be so in tune with your natural rhythm of breathing that you can feel the subtle energies that are happening all over your body. You go through a constant body scan for about 2 hours every day. That's the practice. And for a very long time, I could not feel my womb. I couldn't feel my womb. I couldn't feel my vagina. I couldn't feel any energy there. I could feel energy moving in all of the other spaces in my body, but I was so disconnected from my womb. But I was such a sexual person, so how it's like, how are you so disconnected from your womb, but you can be so sexual, you know? And so I had to really tap into what that disconnection was and really reconcile what that blockage was, what I was allowing to obstruct that free-flowing feminine sensual creative energy that wanted to come out through my voice. And so I do feel like I've done all of the healing and all of the retreats and all of the plant medicine and all of this other stuff to eventually get myself to a point where the music takes the forefront and my message can be shared through sound, because that's one of the most resonant frequencies in the universe. It's a sound frequency. I can write 1,000 books and people ain't gonna read them, but if I put some shit in a song, I bet you they know all the words. So that's my unwritten chapters. It's music.
I love it. I love it. Does any particular song or creative expression want to offer itself now as we close out? Do you want to, is there anything you want to share with whoever is like
Let me see. Well, I have a really good song that I feel like will go with this right now.
Do not play us no music. You better sing, girl.
I am. I wanna play the backing
Oh, the
track
background.
out
Okay.
to it. But I don't know if Zoom will pick it up, so I can play it and see if Zoom will
Let's
pick it
give it
up.
a try. Ain't nothing to it but to do it.
Okay, let me find it. I gotta pull up my music.
Have it added on to the back end because we would love to hear from you. We would love to hear your artistry and your creativity come through in music. Yeah. Okay, sis. Well, thank you so much for being here with me today. It was a pleasure. I'm gonna have to go back home and tell Amira I met you, or what is it? It's not sons, it's not, what is it? What are you her pair to? She's your what and you're her what? Crystal
Crystal
Storm.
Storm.
Crystal Storm. Okay, let me write
I'm
that
a
down.
Crystal King.
You're a crystal what?
A
A
Crystal
crystal.
King.
Okay, so she's a crystal storm. Crystal hand. All right, I'm gonna have to let her know that I got to spend the morning with her crystal hands or whatever. Okay. I've learned a lot from this particular interview, from this discussion, and I feel like at a certain point we'll have to pick up where we left off and have this conversation. But you know, just for all of the listeners, all the women who are out there, I just want to tell you thank you on our behalf. Thank you for coming and being with us this morning. It's been a real treat. We've definitely learned a lot, and we wish you the best on everything in the future, but we definitely look forward to you coming back on another segment and doing something else with us in the future. Thank you so much.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
I'm happy.
And if someone wants to get in touch with you, please let them know right now what is the best way for them to get in touch with you.
AshantiGumbo.com.
Okay.
AshantiGumbo.com.
All right, perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You
Have a
have a wonderful
wonderful day.
day.